Hey, we're back. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Teresa Williams.
And you're listening to Good Growing with the Garden Gal. And we were talking a little bit about garlic during our first segment. And Teresa, what about the testing and amending the soil? What about that? Because we didn't really touch that on that.
George, now is a great time to do that because not only are you not so busy with garden tests this time of year, but if you can get your test results back, you can add soil amendments. And then over the winter months, the biological activity in the soil can help to break down those amendments and put them into form usable for plants. So you're all ready to go for your plants in the spring.
So instead of waiting to springtime, you can actually get all this done ahead of time.
Yeah, and especially with something like lime. They all take time to break down to be plant usable or to change the pH of the soil. So fall is an excellent time to take care of that.
What exactly is lime?
Lime is it's a form of calcium. And you know how if you think about an antacid and you take an antacid with calcium in it, it's kind of the same principle but on a level for soils. And what it does is it raises the pH of the soil, and what you need to do is have your soil in a pH range or an acidity range that's the sweet spot for plant growth. Most of our soils, if they need anything, they'll need lime because you need to raise the pH a little bit. There are some instances, especially if you want to plant blueberries, where we actually have to lower the pH a bit. And in that case, we usually use sulfur.
Okay. And so a lot of times here in the greater Cadillac area, you see these, it must have been a dump truck of some kind that has come and dumped a great big pile of this lime at the corner of a field. It must be a farmer is going to come with a bucket and put it in the back of some sort of a trailer that spreads it on the field. Is that what happens?
Well, most of the time when farmers apply lime, the co-op or whatever that they buy it from, they don't just dump it. They just spread it right then and there. What I've seen dumped on the side of the fields more often has been either compost or I've seen some farmers use biochar.
Okay. I always assumed it was lime. I didn't know for certain. And so, but you're saying if you can get it done ahead of time before the growing season next year, it's going to benefit you in the long run to do it earlier.
Yeah, because all of these things, they're not fertilizers. And this is a pretty important point, the difference between a soil amendment and a fertilizer. An amendment is usually something like a ground rock powder or lime, which is another kind of ground rock. Or compost, or maybe leaf mold. All of these things require activity in the soil by the soil life to be fully incorporated into the soil and to be beneficial to the soil.
Now,
they're not quick-reacting things. So if you can do it in the fall, during the winter months, those reactions can start happening, and so the soil's ready for your plants in the spring.
So if I want to test my soil, how do I go about doing that?
In Michigan, you have the option of working with MSU's Extension Service, and they have a great program where you can get a mailer, and you can go either to your local county extension office, or you can go online to the MSU bookstore, and for $25, you'll get a test kit mailer. It will give you all the instructions you need about how to pull a soil test. It comes with a prepaid mailer. You pull your soil sample, mail it off, and within 2 weeks, you have your answers. Another option is there are private soil testing labs. Often a farmer's cooperative will have assistance with how to do that through a private lab. And I know you have listeners in Illinois. And in Illinois, the Extension Service doesn't do the soil testing, but they do have quite a list of referrals to soil labs that they can give you.
Now, when you're doing the soil testing, I know the sample they take isn't a lot, but do you collect it from different parts of your garden, is that correct?
Right. You want to collect a bit from lots of different places, and you only send off about a cup of soil. But ideally, you want to collect from at least a dozen different spots, and you want to collect the samples deep enough to think about how deep are the plant roots going to go. So we think about a 6 to 8 inch deep, you know, all the way down from inch one, inch two, inch three, all the way down to 6 to 8 inches. Use a trowel is one way you can easily do that. Put all those different samples together in a bucket, mix them up, let them air dry. You don't want to send off a wet sample, but soil that's air dry. And then you can package it up and send it off or take it into your co-op.
How long does it normally take for that to come back, the results?
About 2 weeks.
That's all.
In the fall. Now, in the spring, it can be longer because they just get flooded.
From the farmers, basically.
Yeah, with farmers, homeowners. Their pace is a little more relaxed in the fall, so it's usually about a two-week turnaround time.
Okay. Folks, if you just tuned in, I'm George Corliss.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And you're listening to Good Growing with the Garden Gal, and we're going to start talking about biological activity in the soils. And our soil is teeming with life.
It is.
And so both life forms that you can see and those that require a microscope. So why don't you take it from there?
You know, George, the whole world under the soil is, in a sense, its own world. There's all kinds of cycles going on, all kinds of interactions, all kinds of organisms. Some of the larger ones that we're used to seeing are everything from pill bugs to earthworms. And then we have the microscopic world, which you can see photographs of, but with your own eyes, you're not going to be able to see. And in the microscopic world, we've got things like bacteria. If you think about after a rain, and you think about the fragrance of the soil after a rain, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, that's due to a particular bacteria called an actinomycete, and they're very helpful for decomposing some of our plant residues and turning the nutrients in those plant residues into formats where other plants can take those up and use them. There's also bacteria in the soil that can help take nitrogen from the air and make it available to plants, because we have no shortage of nitrogen, but we have a shortage of nitrogen that's available to plants. It's in the form that the plants can use. And then we have fungi who also help decompose plant residues. And there's actually all kinds of good fungi and good bacteria. There's bad ones too, in terms of there's some that can cause plant diseases. But we've got a lot of bacteria, a lot of fungi. Even some of the nematodes are beneficial to our plants. So we want to make sure that we take care of those. It's kind of like, I like to think of it as, they're the livestock on your farm. These insects, the worms, the bacteria, the nematodes, the fungi. It's like a whole nother set of livestock that you as a gardener or you as a farmer need to take care of and make sure that they have what they need so they can do their job.
So I can't let this go past. A nematode, what is that?
Oh, if you were to view one under a microscope, it looks like a short, tiny, skinny worm. But it's its own classification. It's not in the same class as a worm. But that's what it looks like a thread-like worm.
And then what do they do?
The good ones are one of the many things that are helpful with cycling nutrients. The bad ones, which there are bad species of, they can infect your plants and cause damage.
Wow. So how do you control it?
Well, you know, if you, like livestock, if you give them food and water, they flourish. And the food is organic matter. And that can be in the form of your mulch or your plant residues, and then keeping the soil moist, like the level of a wrung out sponge. That's the kind of moisture that they need, not too much, not too little, kind of like Goldilocks. So you feed them by providing them with organic matter, plant residues, compost, mulch, and keeping the soil moist, and then they are able to thrive. And when they're thriving, the good bacteria, fungi, nematode generally outcompete the ones that are harmful to our plants.
Now, larger life forms, what are some things we're talking about there?
Earthworms. You can see earthworms. You can see things like pill bugs.
Now, pill bugs, those are good for your garden?
Yeah, they help in that decomposing cycle.
No kidding.
Yep.
I guess I always stamped on them when I was all
about,
don't want to do that.
Don't
want
to do that.
Oh.
I do want to talk a bit about worms, though, because none of our worms that we see in our gardens, none of them are native to North America. They're all imports from Europe, and we've gotten used to them. And in a vegetable garden situation, they're beneficial. However, we're finding out that out in the forest, it's a whole nother story. So we need to be careful about not bringing worms out into the forest. If you have them in your garden, great, keep, that's good. You don't have to do anything to try and get rid of them. but you don't want to be importing them. And there's one in particular that we've got our eyes out for. It's already in the Madison, Wisconsin area, and it's called a crazy worm or a jumping worm. This one is from Asia, and we're particularly concerned about that because it rapidly decomposes any organic matter there. And in addition to being so quick, it also turns the soil into this very powdery-like substance where nothing grows well. And in a forest situation, if it escapes out there, they can completely decompose all the leaves in the forest. And in a forest, that layer of leaf litter is kind of like skin for the forest. It helps regulate the temperature of the soil, helps regulate the moisture of the soil, creates a nice place where the seeds of forest plants and trees can germinate.
So where did those worms come from?
Asia, but we're not sure how they got here.
They just all of a sudden popped up on the radar.
People are seeing them. Yeah, they don't really know how they got here. Probably in a potted plant.
But none of the worms that we have in our gardens now actually are in, how did you say that?
Indigenous.
Okay.
Native to here.
Right.
That's correct. And the ones from Europe haven't caused too much of a problem, really. Again, if they stay in cropland, they're fine. We do have to watch them moving out into the forest, though.
Now, what about like night crawlers?
Not native.
Not native?
Not native.
So what did Native Americans and other people use to go fishing with and other things?
Oh, you're really stretching me now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know there were spear fishermen amongst the natives, and other than that, I don't know their fishing techniques.
I never realized that. So are you saying all of the earthworms and stuff like that, none of them are in
indigenous
to Michigan?
Correct. There are no worms native to the upper Midwest. Any place where the glaciers have been, there's no worms native here.
No kidding.
So if you if you're using worms for bait, which is fine, we just want you to be sure that you don't dump your worms somewhere, like out in the forest or anywhere. Be responsible with your worms that you don't use. Dispose of them in a way that they're not going to escape out into the woods.
Dump them in the lake where the fish can eat them if you're not going to use them.
That might work.
Yeah.
They might drown or something. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know about that stuff either. I had no idea about the worm situation there. And so a lot of times when I remember back in the comic book era that they would always have these things, you know, make $10,000, you know, in a month or whatever, mm-hmm. selling earthworms or that's not good.
You know, we have worms here, and we're not going to get rid of them, but we don't want to introduce them to more places than they already are.
And so basically the earthworms are eating the compost.
The dead plant material.
Okay. And then they're leaving. That's a good thing? Or that's the bad
thing? In a garden situation, it's good because we want those nutrients to cycle.
Okay.
In a forest situation, we don't want them to cycle that quickly because we want to make sure that in our forested lands, we always have that layer of dead leaves on the surface of the soil. That's important in forests. It's not as important in agriculture.
That's just amazing. And so the castings that come from the worms, that's good.
That's good. That's beneficial to our garden plants and our agricultural fields.
And then they're also aerating the soil.
Yeah, if you've got a heavy soil, earthworms are great for creating channels for air, for water. So they do provide benefits in an agriculture situation.
Wow. So thank God for the robins that are just going out through the yard.
And eating them, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of this it just seems so delicate. I mean, if you get too much of one little thing, it just can overrun or destroy a whole garden, a whole planting of corn, soybeans, whatever.
That balance is important. And we as growers, as farmers, as gardeners, we're kind of like the conductor of an orchestra trying to keep things in balance. You know, you like the sound of a flute, but you wouldn't want all flute. And you like the sound of a bassoon, but you wouldn't want all bassoon. So as a farmer, as a gardener, we try and keep things in balance as much as we can.
So how long before we're going to see when we go up into the UP and we can't carry our firewood up there, we're going to see signs that say you can't carry your earthworms up there either?
We might. I don't know. We want to be really careful about transporting things that could have worms in them. In Michigan, in the Lansing area, they found some of these crazy worms. So we have to be careful about, like now, if I were, the crazy worms are kind of new on our radar. I didn't learn about them till just maybe
recently?
6 months ago.
Okay.
And so now if I'm going to buy a potted plant, rather than just taking the plant out of the pot and putting it right into the soil, I'm going to wash all that soil off of that plant. I'm going to wash it off onto concrete. And if there were any eggs, little egg cases from the worms, which would be very hard to see, but I'm going to let them dry out on concrete, and I'm going to break that cycle. Same with moving leaves. I would not, because we don't know. I mean, think about where to find worms. You go look under a leaf pile. I would not recommend moving leaves from one property to another. Again, because of that concern of these egg cases are very small, pretty much impossible to see with your own eyes. So we have to be careful about moving anything that could have a worm egg case in it.
That is just amazing. Just amazing. Well, folks, that's the end of our second segment here. You want to stay tuned, though, because we're going to be talking about the crop of the month in our third segment, and that's going to be apples.